It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So there we go. That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
No.
Thanks for submitting your question. Wait, huh?
This is the start.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boy.
All right. Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is so intensely, all-encompassingly, brain-shockingly funny that some of our fans forget to laugh.
Yep. It's like the humor induces a catatonic state.
Yes. And so they forget to display any outward signs that they were amused.
That's
at
right.
All.
Because really a catatonic state is inaction, but in a way it's what happens when your body is so racked with the
amusement.
Tremors of hilarity.
Yes.
That it seizes up.
I feel like you've oversold it now.
And it's not unlike a comatose state. I mean, if you see the person, they kind of glazed over.
I feel like they're going to start questioning
but
our sincerity.
They universally report afterwards that it was a positive experience. I mean, it sounds awful, but it isn't. But, you know, consult your doctor beforehand and all that stuff.
If podcasts persist for more than 4 hours.
Right.
Then we've got a problem.
And definitely don't listen to 4 in a row because...
No. I can't imagine listening to multiple episodes in a row.
I guess I can't either.
I would think you might puke.
It's best not to be alone in your house because you don't know what's going to happen.
Get somewhere safe.
Don't listen while driving, but by all means listen while working because, you know, the glazed over look, it pretty much everybody's got that. You might as well have it while you're having fun.
Exactly.
Instead of just being bored.
Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 112.
And for those of you just joining us, and every once in a while I still hear about a new person, every once in a while that listens. We don't get a lot of people that listen consistently, but we get people who pick it up every once in a while. Anyway, if you're just joining us, the whole premise here, we have a hat. It's magic. It has its own email. You can email it, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And there you can give it a brief email, something short, asking a little question, comment, topic, something like that. The magic involves the hat spontaneously reading said emails and turning them into little 3x2.5 cards with the information written on it. We pull them out of the hat randomly and talk about it till we're bored. That is the show. So, William?
Yes.
How was your week?
Let's see. For the project we're working on, The Adventures of Briar Rose, as I told everybody last week, I was going to start thinking about how we were going to cast this thing. I updated the Google Doc with some a list of the people that are, you know, the parts.
Oh,
I didn't put
okay.
that in the original doc, but a list of all of the various parts.
Not casted, just dramatis personae.
Yes, but okay. Then also next to some things I put names. Like okay. I put your name next to a couple things.
Oh, really? What am I playing?
Well, I liked you for Frog.
All right.
And the Sausage.
And wait, at the same time. They actually have dialogue together.
Yes. They don't step on each other's lines though.
All right,
but that doesn't really matter. We can record. But you know, you've got that little voice you do with kind of a accent. When I was writing,
I have several voices with all sorts of accents.
It's the one you do all the time. And when I was writing the part of the sausage, that voice was actually in my head.
Was it this one?
Yeah, like except this? With the high.
Oh no, me sir, that, me exactly sir frog. Yes, no, which is just a bastardization of the weird Latino house lady character from Family Guy, Consuela.
Whatever it is, but that's what I heard when I was writing.
No, he's not here. you go.
I also cast all of the people who play princes, including you. I cast to play the guards.
Oh yeah.
Because I thought it would be fun to
seriously,
have.
Seriously, where is the prince?
Yeah, exactly, and. I'm not even that concerned if people can tell a little bit. I mean, I want the guard voices to sound a little different, obviously. But if people hear it and they can tell, to me that's part of the joke.
Yeah.
I cast a few other people where
there are some you've had in mind for a while.
So. Yes, but there are a lot of blank spaces. So if anyone wants to go out and take a look and let me know if they had an idea of a part they wanted that's still open and you don't see your name.
Is it too public to put a link in the blog?
I'm pretty sure that that's a good point. That right now only people who are invited to the document can see it. So
okay. But isn't inviting just giving them a link?
I don't know.
You don't have a list on Google Docs that says.
Well, I probably do, but I'm thinking back to when I created it, and I'm pretty sure I put in the email addresses or whatever of all the people that could see it.
Yeah, but I think an email just came with a link.
Oh, maybe that's right.
We don't know how Google Docs works, so.
Honestly, I don't. I mean, I just put it out there. In fact, I made the mistake of putting a Word doc out there, and then I converted it to a Google Doc because.
Well, if y'all don't have access and you want access, email a hat and just make sure that the hat understands This is not for the live show. This is a question that, make a distinction.
But
not for the podcast, you can say, you know, that kind of thing.
When I was writing the script and I was writing both the sausage part and the frog part, I thought, oh, this part would be perfect. Both of these parts would be perfect for Tony because of that voice.
How am I doing the frog?
I thought of you doing it straight, but I mean, well, you can do it however you want. But it just, there's some comedy there is what I'm saying. And I've
So I'm funny to you? I'm like a clown to you now, here to amuse you?
Yeah.
I've never seen Goodfellas, so I can only just barely wing that.
But, I mean, not that the two other people that I cast as princes can't do comedy, but I've had you, because it was a funny bit, and I had you doing comedy and other things that I've done, I naturally thought of you and how you would do it, so I went ahead and cast you in that part. So that's one thing. Other than that, not a lot happened. I went home.
Dad's. We could not work on our other project that we're not telling anybody about because you went home.
Went home. My father's birthday was yesterday, but I went home over the weekend, and it's always good to go down to the farm and, you know, visit family. But also in the spring and fall especially, I've probably said this before, it's a great time to be down there, and I've got a lot of great memories of those seasons on the farm. So that was fun. There's a video, actually. My brother put a video out. One of the trees on my dad's property died, and so we cut it down. And he took a video of my younger brother cutting it down, and my sister and I are helping him sort of push it over once it gets. So there's a video out there of me helping push a dead tree down.
We chopped a tree down out here. It was crazy. We almost killed ourselves.
But that's really all that's been going on. But yeah, if anyone wants to go out who's interested in the project to look at the doc, most of you who have expressed interest already should have access to the doc and should already have received a link and everything. Have a look at it and let me know what part you are interested in.
You might want to send out another email that you've updated just because, sad as it is for me to say, not everyone involved listens.
Okay, well, I'll try to remember to do that. But yeah, that's really all that's been going on. But your anniversary was yesterday also.
Yes, mine and the producer's 9th anniversary was yesterday.
Now, last year, when we had the podcast after your anniversary, You said you went to a steakhouse. What's it called? Something Joseph's Steakhouse?
Oh, Joseph's? Did we go to Joseph's?
That's where you went last year.
Okay, okay.
And, but the other restaurant, you mentioned another restaurant that you like to go to, which is, and you had to put a link to it in the notes for the show.
Oh, yeah?
And that's the restaurant you did go to this time.
Oh.
What was that again?
I don't, I'm starting to think you were at my anniversary. You know a lot more about this than
because
I do.
You told me in email where you went.
We went to Cafe Dodici.
Yeah.
In Washington.
That's the one
Washington, you mentioned. Washington, Iowa, not Washington, D.C. Yeah, or Washington
that's
State.
That's the one you mentioned a year ago.
Okay.
And a year ago, you put in the show notes, you put in a link to Joseph's, which is where you went last year.
Okay.
And you put a link to this place that you're just talking about, and that's where you went this year.
Yes.
Because last year, as coincidence would have it, Beth wrote in a question asking about romantic places to go have dinner, and you had just only a few days before for your anniversary gone to a romantic place, and that's how we got to talking about
there
it.
There we go.
Just a year ago. All
maybe
the coincidences.
She'll ask again. Yes, we went to there, Dodici, which is Italian for 12.
Italian what?
For 12, Dodici.
Oh. Oh, the word is
yes. Yes. And I don't know how long they've been doing this, but I noticed this time, every item on their menu is a dollar figure and 12 cents. I did not notice that till this time.
Okay.
And at first I was like, why? And then I'm like, oh, wait, that's right.
Dodici. But yeah, you said it was an Italian place. And
it's an Italian place. It's very nice. I had something of a specialty of theirs on the menu in that it was listed in the Des Moines Register, I believe, on the list of the 100 things you have to eat before you die in 2006.
Hmm.
So I got it. It sounded fairly unassuming. It looked fairly unassuming. It is essentially a stuffed and fried chicken breast.
Stuffed with what?
Cream cheese, smoked Gouda, some basil, I think.
Hmm.
There's a beurre blanc over the whole thing.
Oh, what?
A beurre blanc. It's a type of sauce that's got a lot of butter involved. I don't really know what was going on here. I don't really know why this is the case, but it was unbelievable.
Hmm.
It was so good. I do not understand the specifics, but it was so good.
But you can die now.
Yes. Well, no, I got 99 other things.
Oh, here. Well.
Yeah, actually, the producer suggested I should not get it on the grounds that I would never die.
Well,
if I did not eat.
Technically, you can eat 99, just not don't eat that 100th thing.
Skip the one. But what if somebody sneaks it into my meal? It's like trying to poison me. Also had a fairly unique and lovely tiramisu.
Yeah, you often. That seems to be one of your favorite desserts.
I'm a fan, but my bigger one tends to be creme brulee, and they also have that on the menu. But this time, I did not get that because I've never had their tiramisu, so I tried it. And I like this one. They don't appear to use any booze involved. They just used, like, espresso.
Ninth anniversary. Nice. Wow.
Yes.
That's great. You know what? I learned something interesting this past week about the number 12.
Hmm. It's English for Dodici?
No. Some people have been doing research on... They've been trying to figure out what's the smallest... How do I describe this? What's the smallest number of molecules you can use to make a piece of workable memory? Right? Like, for example, let's say you want to have a byte. You want to store a byte of information.
Yes.
Of course, we all know that there's 8 bits in a byte. So you might think, well, you can have 8 molecules and you string them together and you do the configuration the proper way, and then you could have, that's the smallest piece of physical memory you can have is 8 molecules, but that doesn't work.
It's not true.
It doesn't work. You have to have at
you
least...
You know how I know that's not true?
How do you know?
Because you wouldn't really be telling the story this way if it was like, and yes, the end. Speaking of 12,
no, wait. You have to have 12. That's what they figured out.
4 are the alternates in case somebody gets too tired.
I don't know why it is, but 12 molecules, the smallest, what they believe they've discovered is the smallest unit of physical, say, computer memory you can have is 8 molecules long.
12 molecules.
Or, I'm sorry, 12 molecules long, right. And then 12 molecules, somehow you can get a byte in there.
I feel like my laptop should be smaller.
Well, I just found that really interesting. Now, there's another... That's kind of nanotech level technology.
Why, yes, it is.
Well, but there's other... There are people who think you can go smaller still and you can... You could make...
Femtotech.
Yeah, that's kind of what it's called or whatever.
I just read that book, Diaspora, that was way into molecular physics and geometry way heavily. So this is all pretty fresh in my brain.
So I don't know if they could come up with even a smaller...
You absolutely could because, you just use bosons or whatever. It's this. Well, not absolutely, but it's definitely within the realm of theory. In the same way that's in the realm of theory that you can actually make nanomachines smaller than a molecule.
Right, right. But here's the thing about that, though, is that I did some calculations, and it seems like, I mean, you could get, we're talking about huge amounts of memory storage.
Yeah.
In a cube that's like 4 millimeters.
That's why I feel my laptop should be smaller.
That's incredible.
They're clearly not getting their shit together.
But yeah, it was very interesting. 12, I thought, why 12? Why would it be? There's got to be a reason that it's 12.
4 to turn the chair. Wait, sorry, that's a different joke entirely.
Anyway, that probably doesn't interest anybody else but me, but I thought it was kind of cool.
Also, roller derby this week I went to.
Oh, you did? I didn't know there it was about this week.
You never pay enough attention to me. I believe I said in last week's episode that there was coming up.
Really? I don't know.
Yes.
Are you sure you did?
I'm pretty sure. You were kind of drunk, so it's hard to say. But I think I did.
Okay.
But yes, there was a roller derby this Saturday. We lost. We barely lost. It was an extremely exciting match.
Well, who was it?
Paper Valley out of Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And they are several ranks higher than us, so it kind of makes sense, but it was close. We started out ahead, quickly fell behind. At the half, we were quite a bit behind, like 50 points. Came back in the second half to tie it, dropped behind again, and then in the last two jams, we came within just a handful of points, and then fell back a little bit. It was really impressive.
Well, they're playing well, I mean, game for game, but, you know, their win-loss record's not very good.
No one got ejected.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm.
Because that seems to be almost a regular thing.
The first one of the season now, that there were like 5 or 6 got ejected.
Yeah.
So they're getting the hand of that. Still a lot of fouling. But
yeah.
And that's the thing at this point. I think everybody's still just finding their place in terms of the new rules.
Right, you've got new rules, and there are a lot of new people kind of taking just new people. It seemed like they always have new people coming in, of course.
Yeah.
But it seems like this season there's really new faces, like even in their A team.
Had one person I outright didn't know, but there are 2 or 3 that like I barely knew.
Yeah, right.
I think we've had some changeover, and we're about to lose Animal Mother.
Yeah, I heard that she was.
She's out right now because she's injured, but she's going to Alaska for grad school.
Oh wait, maybe I didn't know that.
Yeah, Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm very sad, but she's very excited, and there's a derby team in Fairbanks. She's already looked it up.
Right.
But at the moment, she's got a sprained ankle, so she was bench coach this last time. And I'm confused, because I think she and I talked a little on Twitter. I thought she was hoping to get back on her skates before she left. But the way they talked on Saturday night was like that was going to be her last home game at all.
Well,
so I'm confused.
Home game? I mean, maybe she's going to...
Well, there's more home games between now and August.
Oh, I see. Well,
The next one is on the 11th. The producer and I are going to miss it, however. It is the Race for the Cure in Peoria, Illinois. And the day after is Mother's Day. and we have a mother who is a survivor of breast cancer with a best friend who is currently going through it. So when you add all that up, there's no way in hell we cannot be there for the weekend. Yes. We're going to participate in the Race for the Cure. Well, they're going to participate. I probably won't. Walking is still tricky for me, but it's getting better. In fact, next Monday, I've got an appointment with my physical therapist at the gym. We're going to go through my weight machines and talk about what I can do and how to do it.
Good.
I'm kind of psyched about that.
What else did you do during your week?
Well,
I know you've got a lot to talk about. You always do, and then I never let you talk about it.
Not much. I've been playing a lot of New Vegas. I'm so close to being done now. It is quite likely that by next week's episode, I will be completely done with New Vegas. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Oh, God. I'm over 130 hours. I'm really tired of this game.
Well, just stop playing it.
No. Here's the thing. You remember Fallout 3?
Yeah.
You remember it had a very good story.
I guess, yeah.
Remember the DLCs from Fallout 3?
Yeah.
They had okay story, but it wasn't really tied in. They were just sort of tacked on extra things,
sure,
or whatever.
Sure.
Now you remember New Vegas?
Yes.
In my opinion, New Vegas had a much better story than Fallout 3. I thought it was more nuanced. There was more involved.
Too. Sure.
The DLC from New Vegas, you did not play, correct?
No.
The DLC has an amazing story that goes through all four DLCs and actually ties in with the main story.
Wow.
Stuff that was talked, like people that were talked about in the main story, you actually meet and deal with. You get into your past, your character's past. Mm. It's really impressive stuff.
Well, we didn't play any of the DLCs for Mass Effect either.
I didn't play any of those except for the one where you got the Prothean.
Well, which that's what I'm saying. We
yeah,
did.
That one was pretty awesome.
Well,
they've made a bunch of others. In fact, they made ones. They're still making them at the moment. I think they finally made the last one.
But that particular one, a lot of people think that it shouldn't have been a DLC. It should have been just part of the game because anyone who didn't play the DLC, there's a huge amount of information, amount of gameplay and important stuff that you don't get to find out. You know,
I think one of the later ones involves discovery of a species that's on par with the Reapers. Hmm. Like an organic version of the Reapers that you go hunt down to try and help you and all this shit.
Wow.
I mean, I don't even know. So they put big stuff into a lot of these, yeah. But yeah, so I'm very close to... I'm on the last DLC, and I'm near the end of that. So I'm pretty psyched about being done with that. And then I'm going to play something on the PC, so Mark may actually be able to take a recommendation. I haven't figured out for sure. I've got it narrowed down, I think, to two games. I haven't figured out which I'm going to play yet. But the wife is playing Ratchet and Clank again, and so she wants to use the consoles.
A year ago, you were just building the city for your Dresden Files game.
Yep.
So
yep.
What did you do with that this weekend?
Pretty much at a year. We did some. We did not get super far in that, but they are on their way to bring Helen back to life.
Oh, good.
On their little hero's journey. And so far it has taken them to a bunch of little 3 feet green looking fairy creatures who want their help ridding them of this little infestation of tiny, tiny dark blue things that everybody jokingly called Smurfs until they actually saw them swarm over a guy and kill him. And in trying to pick one up, they got bitten very severely by one of the very sharp teeth. Mm. So our resident water mage was going to blow them away with a sort of fire hose action. But he's not super good in the Never Never. He sort of doesn't... His scope on magical abilities gets off. And so what he basically ended up doing was a tidal wave along the entire valley, which sent the two guys who were being attacked away, one of our friends who was just hanging out there, and all the other guys washed far, far away. We had to go track them down later. We found one of them hanging by a tree. It was a little bit crazy.
It doesn't sound like I mean, all the stories you tell about the characters in this game, they sound like they make a lot of mistakes, and not just little ones.
Yes.
Huge mistakes that have awful consequences.
Mistakes and complications are a big part of how this game works. You get mechanically rewarded for complicating your own character's life, because that's what makes it interesting.
Okay.
And so, mechanically in this case, the character cast a spell, the character did not quite succeed on the spell, and so had the option to take some of the magical energy as backlash to himself or as fallout, which would affect the environment around him, and he opted to take it as fallout. In addition, I compelled something he already had, which stated that he has issues with the Never Never, and I compelled him and gave him a fate point to use later in exchange for making it much worse. And he said, oh, hell yeah.
I see.
Because he thought it would be hilarious, and it was.
Oh, okay, good. Well, at least everybody's having a good time.
Yes. No, that's what makes the stories interesting.
Is when big dramatic things happen.
Is when things get complicated. That's specifically what it is. It's not a good or a bad. It's supposed to be more complicated.
Well, it always sounds complicated every time you talk about it. People dying, people having to bring someone back to life, someone being possessed. I mean, it's like, man, it's nothing straightforward.
No.
Everyone tries to do something. They almost always fail, but not just a little bit. They fail spectacularly.
Oh, but they also succeed spectacularly. The things that these people have accomplished, the same water mage who had this problem managed to put together on the fly a spell basically against this terrible monster that had been eating people. A ghoul in Dresden parlance, if you're familiar with that. He basically managed to summon from the pile of bones all the tormented spirits that had been there before and pretty much just eradicate the guy with them. And he did that because all the complications he'd had, which had netted him fate points, he spent those fate points. That's how the fate system works. You get fate points by making things complicated for yourself, and then you use those fate points to be awesome later. There have been some amazing things that these people have done. Some one in a million shots and stuff. It's just the funny ones are the mess ups.
I see. You know, I have a question to ask. Did you have anything else you want to talk about?
I want to say the game, this is a bit of a curious part right now. I try and be very freeform. I try and be very cooperative. I try not to plan out too much or shunt my characters into a particular pathway.
Yep.
Right now, I'm a little bit hemmed in because they've had somebody divine or prophesy, as it were, how this endeavor is going to work. And so I kept it really vague, but I still have to make note. And I'm like, technically this and this happens. And I can make it so you say, oh, I misunderstood what that meant, but I still want it, you know, to play out and all that. So. So yeah, it's a little bit of a weird position, but it was fun. I got to have this sweet little old Jewish lady prophesy for them, and that was fun.
Okay.
I'm playing a lot of old crabby Jews in this game. I don't know why. Are there a lot of old crabby Jews in San Francisco? Because I'm making a lot of them.
I don't know.
We've got at least two major NPCs that have really thick Yiddish accents. It's very weird. I don't know how it came up. To be fair, one of them is an actual Hebrew golem. And the other one is a Jewish matchmaker. But still. All right. What were you going to ask?
Well, I was going to bounce this idea off of you because, you know, sometimes when I'm doing research for some of the stuff I'm working on and you know, one of the projects, well, maybe I won't get into the project you and I are working on, but
it's a secret.
It's required me to do some research, and it's without getting into how this happened. It brought
me. You looked at porn, didn't you?
No. It brought me to a place where people were speculating about, you know, the definition of the term geek.
Which I
always find kind of ridiculous that people even argue
Absolutely.
About this. It's just a name people call each other, whatever. But some people want to claim it as a badge of pride and whatever. But just as a as sort of a, I guess I think of myself kind of outside this whole debate, observing from the outside and noticing linguistically how this terminology sort of evolves. And I think I might have said this to you before, that it seems to me that one of the things that anyone who other people call geek and people who call themselves geek, what those people seem to all have in common, regardless of what they think makes them a geek, is they seem to be very playful, and that's a very important word in the definition here, playful, in terms of identity and reality. And this is exactly the thing that makes them a target of derision, is because we live in a culture where, you know, identity and reality are supposed to be really fixed, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This isn't something that our culture is tolerant of people playing around with. And yet, there's a group of people who like playing around with these things, and for reasons that usually baffle people, they get a lot of criticism and a lot of prejudice and sometimes outright hatred hurled at them. But that's the reason why, because our culture is obsessed with rigid, fixed identity and reality. Mm. But so this is something that all geeks seem to have in common, in my observation. People who call themselves geeks or people who are called geeks. But there was something else I realized. That's not enough. That's a necessary condition, but not sufficient. Another thing that you need, if you're going to be labeled as this or label yourself this, is...
And that squeaking you hear is a mouse. We're infested. No, it is the producer coming home and squeaking from her yoga. She looks so relaxed, I can't even say.
Except that she's carrying some big heavy thing.
Because I'm strong now from yoga.
Oh.
Yes, yoga makes you strong. Wait, that's yogurt.
No.
Calcium.
Strength, balance, and flexibility.
Wow.
And relaxation.
And really, wasn't that the motto on your family's crest in
and
the Middle Ages?
This paddle ball.
Yeah, that's why we're called Turners. Oh, that's hilarious. Okay.
Wow.
Oh, come on.
Anyway.
I'll give you points for speed, but I don't know.
But I was thinking that along with that playfulness with identity and reality, you also need it. There has to be a mechanism through which you're exhibiting that playfulness, which tends to be, for the geek, media, right? Games, stories, movies, and things like that. So there has to, it's like these two things both have to be present. These two things sort of have to cross, so to speak.
Mm.
Now, what I was thinking about when I realized this was that if you remove the playfulness with identity and reality, but you leave the interest in media, well, then you have ordinary people, right? Because most people these days have an interest in films and TV and whatever. It's just that they watch it for entertainment purposes only. They don't watch it, take it in, and then get playful with the story, you know, think of their own stories or put themselves in the story or imagine themselves as characters in the story. They just consume the media and that's it. And they think that the people who don't just consume it, but also get playful with identity and reality, they're taking it all too seriously. But taking all too seriously is not something that would make them hate these people. Again, there's that cultural thing that really bothers them, that these people are being so playful with identity and reality. If you take away the consumption of popular media or of common media, and you just have playful with reality and identity.
You have schizophrenia?
Well, no, then you have the people that are more generally called nerds.
Oh.
See what I'm saying? Like, this is going to be anybody who's interested in, say, the sciences or the arts, but isn't very much connected to, you know, TV shows and popular film and things like that. So you get, you know, it's not so much a band geek as it is a band nerd, or a theater geek as a theater nerd. You see what I'm trying to say?
Like, I believe I understand the premise you are setting up here.
Right. So now, again, keeping in mind that some of these words are just words or whatever, this, as I was thinking about this, it did seem the formulation I was coming up with did seem to represent how these terms are more or less popularly used right now. And so I wanted to bring it up to you because I was curious as to what you thought of all of that.
I have several thoughts on this. My first thought is I do not believe there is any sort of consensus on the way those terms are used.
No, I realize that.
Remotely.
No. But certain things emerge in terms of trends and how, you know, like if you look up in Wiki, if you look these terms up, it does seem like nerd, for example, is a term of more derision than geek is.
Some people make that argument. Yeah. Some people do not. I have heard people attempt to have this discussion many, many times with many contradictory opinions on the subject. I've heard many that do not jibe with what you have described. I've heard some that arguably could. I've never heard the definitions you have put forth specifically. I consider that a perfectly functional model. I don't believe there is a correct answer or even a common answer.
No,
answer.
I'm sure there isn't. I'm sure there isn't.
I believe at this point, except in the smallest of scale amongst your friends or whatever, or in the most nebulous terms, it's useless to try and define those because everybody has done all over the place. I think that's perfectly functional. If I had to go with the most common definition that I've heard, the mode, as it were, but I still think that this is by no means the vast majority. I have heard the term geek to mean anyone who is particularly obsessive about something.
I've heard that too, but I don't find that a very useful definition.
And in general, I would agree with you. I think a lot of people find nerd to be derisive. I believe we are of a generation that a lot of the people who are involved in this discussion were of an age where nerd was the term with which they were bullied.
Mm-hmm.
There are other time periods and some of it's geographical where geek was the term.
Yes,
I think we're dealing with that less.
Right.
I believe nerd was the one that was used most on me. Nerd is the one that I think I most identify with, however, personally. Possibly because of that, because I'm used to that label. In college, somebody gave me a definition that I thought was incredibly insightful and witty. I don't know that it's at all accurate. But my friends that I made in college said to me, a geek is a social outcast. A nerd is an antisocial outcast.
Well, and that almost, and I thought that was almost goes along with what I'm saying, too. But see, this is why I've heard this, a geek is just someone who's passionate about something. Well, no, I don't think that's a very useful. And
some people throw the word dork into this process
I understand, but the problem I have with that definition is what people do with that definition, they'll say, for example, a person can be obsessed with sports and they're a sports geek. No, that doesn't seem to me to represent the social reality. A person can be obsessed with sports, and they're not generally viewed. A geek might say, "Well, that's you're just obsessed with sports, just the way I'm obsessed with this, so it's the same thing." And on some level, of course, it is the same thing. But the social reality is that person doesn't lose any status by being obsessed with sports. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Okay, but then you're including loss of status intentionally in your definition.
Yeah, I am.
All right.
I think that because here's the thing about the person who's obsessed with sports. By having obsession with sports, they're not being playful with reality or identity.
Oh, I think you could argue against that quite seriously.
You could,
the whole concept of our team and we won is very much going with that idea.
Right, but what I'm saying is that's a culturally acceptable, that actually feeds into the obsession that our culture has with making rigid identities and rigid realities. In other words, like you just said, our team, I'm related to this. It's actually not being playful at all. It's making a harsh commitment. and it's saying, this is the team I identify with, and I can't identify with any other team. Whereas a geek, is all about, well, you know, this time I'm going to play the bad guy in this video game and not the good guy, or this time I'm going to be a Jedi. And, you know, you do get some geeks who they love dressing up as stormtroopers when they go to things, and they like being troopers and stuff. But for the most part, the geek community is all about, you don't just pick one. You know, you...
Oh, I would disagree with that as
you
well.
You do this, a little bit of this.
I know lots of geeks who get very, very focused. And I know I'm continually surprised, to use the example of video games, of people who never play... Now that the whole morality thing is a big thing, will never play the bad guy.
You're right. That's true. But of course, I don't mean to overgeneralize and say that nobody is X and nobody is Y. I'm just saying, in general sense, that the sports... So the one that the geeks want to call a sports geek and say, see, they're just like us. The reason they're doing that is because they realize that they lose status somehow, and they think that that's arbitrary, but it isn't arbitrary. The culture does perceive the geek doing something that the sports fanatic doesn't do.
I will say this. There are individuals who I consider to be sports geeks. There are individuals who I consider to be obsessed with sports who I do not consider to be sports geeks.
Hmm.
There are individuals who I consider to have social stigma attached to them because of the nature of their obsession with sports. So whatever it is...
See, I've never seen that before.
Whatever it is that causes me to think in those terms is more than just an obsession with sports.
No,
clearly.
I get it.
Clearly, but obviously, I don't know what that is.
But I've never experienced anyone who lost status because they were obsessed with sports.
Oh no, I've seen.
I mean,
it
maybe they were teased a little bit, but never. I mean, never to the extent where someone who's obsessed with Lord of the Rings loses status. I mean,
frequently it has to do with the granularity of their obsession with specifics.
Okay, well,
stats nuts is the most.
Again, I've known a lot of people like that, and it didn't seem to affect their status at all.
Yeah.
But as soon as someone gets obsessed with Star Trek or Lord of the Rings or something, I mean, that's their status changes immediately and dramatically, more than I've ever seen any kind of status thing interact with a sports person, which is why I think the reason geeks gravitate toward this, it's something a person's passionate about, is because what they want a definition that can basically include everybody, and because they're trying to fight that status thing, but they can't. There is a status thing about being a geek and being labeled a geek, and the people who are passionate about other things that aren't fantasy and science fiction and games and speculative fiction, those people are allowed to be fixated on these other things without losing status. A geek is not, because, and I think the thing that makes the geek different and why they lose status is because what they're obsessing about is something where they're, you know... What is it that people often criticize geeks about? It's they don't want to live in the real world, you know? They say stuff like this. They wish they lived in Middle Earth, or they wish they lived they were in Star Trek on the even though that's not what geeks are about. They like to imagine that they're doing these things, again, playing fast and loose with identity and reality. But the obsessions that people who aren't geeks have, they feel like those are okay. Those are tied into reality somehow. Like, being a fanatic about sports, you're being a fanatic about actual people playing a game where, you know, there's athletic ability involved, and that's valued more than, say, you know, any kind of ability to tell a story or come, you know, the talent that is exhibited in your role-playing games sessions is pretty extraordinary, but that's not as valued in our culture as, you know, being able to slam dunk a basketball. And so a person who's a fanatic about sports is considered to be fanatical about something that's more real and more substantive and more valuable than the person who's a fanatic about someone who can write a good science fiction story. And so there's definitely a status thing there that can't be ignored or swept away by just saying, oh, a geek's just someone who's passionate about something. That's too watered down a definition, and it's clearly crafted deliberately to kind of, look, see, we're not freaks, we're not weirdos, everybody has passion about something. Well, no, you're passionate about something that challenges the ideas of reality and identity that our culture, our mainstream culture, does not want to do and is afraid to do. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because to me, that group of people that does that, whoever does it, what do you want to call them, geeks, nerds, it doesn't matter what you call them, there is a class of people, if you will, in our culture that challenges identity and challenges reality, and what they're doing, it, to me, is very important. And this is why people hate it so much. This is why people are down on it so much. This is why people construct all these status structures around it and put the people who do this in a closet and marginalize them because they're afraid of these challenges to identity and reality. And I think to find, for anybody to find ways to water that down or not put a spotlight on it and say, you know what, this is what these people are challenging identity and reality, and that's good and important. And that challenging of identity and reality is what creates things in our culture. It's the thing that will save our culture from extinction, if anything can. And I think that needs to be recognized and celebrated and held up as a good thing, not sort of, you know, well, we're embarrassed about that part of our culture, so we're going to define ourselves in a way that hopefully will include other people and make them think we're not freaks. Well, no, you are freaks in this culture, and that's not a bad thing. That's probably the thing that's going to save us, if anything can. I mean, don't you think that's true?
What part of that, first of all? And no. The best I can give you is that I think there is no functional, nor will there ever be functional or useful definition of nerd or geek.
But that's not really the point.
That's as far as I can go, because I don't agree with your argument at all. But I'm not going to argue against it, because I think we're arguing about something that I think is non-functional.
Well, you don't agree with what argument?
With your definition of a geek.
But
I don't agree with that.
Okay, that's fine. And that's,
I do agree with the idea that there are certain types of abilities, certain types of interests, certain types of hobbies, certain types of habits in culture, in this culture, some of which are valued more than others. How that ties, I don't know that I buy the argument about their defining characteristic involves pushing out identity and reality. I think you can find counterexamples on both sides all over the place. And I don't know how that has any necessary bearing or useful bearing on the word geek.
Well, whether or not it has any bearing or useful bearing on the word geek is...
Well, that's what this whole thing started.
I know, but I realize that. That's kind of how I tried to introduce the concept, and maybe that was the wrong way to go. But now I'm just saying, again, as I said before, I think there's a class of people, regardless of what you call them, that are like this. And in terms of counterexamples on one side or the other, I don't see how relevant that is either. Because no matter how you slice it, there are people who are willing to be playful with these concepts of identity and reality, and there are people who are not. And
I agree with that.
And our culture in general, the most influential and powerful people in our culture are not.
I do not know that I agree with that.
Well, that seems to be very apparent to me.
And that seems very apparent that you find it very apparent.
Well,
honestly, this whole your whole argument seems incredibly impassioned, like something terrible happened to you or somebody that you know and you're fighting back. The whole thing smacks of personal injury, honestly. That you do not sound like your usual fairly stoic and rational arguer when you're discussing
this. Well, that's because as I said before, I think that you know, I am very passionate about, you know, how messed up our culture is and dysfunctional culture is and where it's going, and I'm very concerned about where it's going. So yes, I have a lot of personal and emotional energy invested in it. I don't think anything personally has happened to me, because frankly, there's no definition, not even my own definition of geek is one that I personally identify with, so it's not about that. I just think that the people who play fast and loose with these concepts, they're not just not in the mainstream, they're sort of pushed aside and sort of swept aside as like crazy people or something, and that's one way they're controlled. And I think that I do think that's a big problem. And you know, and I have known people who have suffered under this.
Oh, of course, absolutely.
I don't know if I have, because again, I don't know if I feel like I belong to this class of people necessarily. But
yeah, I mean, that's gone hand in hand for years. Plenty of individuals who were sci-fi fans, who were role-playing fans, myself included, got bullied as a kid. That may be part of my reaction here, because a lot of this feels like if I got bullied or picked on for that stuff and I go home and my mom would tell me, well, they just are scared of that stuff and they don't understand because you're the smart one and this shows good imagination and really this is a strength, not a weakness, and you should feel good about yourself. And I would be like, oh my God, Mom, you don't understand. And now I'm kind of like, oh my God, William.
Well, that's not really what I'm saying at all, but...
It seems like a pretty big cheerleading for the geeks by your geek definition.
Well, again, as I said it before, I probably shouldn't even have introduced the whole conversation with that terminology.
Well, okay, because for the William creations, whatever the hell you want to call them, for the Snarfblats. Your whole thing seems to be, and the Snarfblats are awesome, and the man is keeping the Snarfblats down.
Well, I think that's true.
I don't know what to do with that. To me, I mean, I think there are some valid points and some valid thoughts in here. Overall, it seems very sweeping and broad-stroked to me.
Well, it is.
It seems perilously close to conspiracy theory.
Well, no, it's not that, trust me. And you know what? I get this all the time when I talk about stuff like this because I don't believe in conspiracy theories. But...
Just that the people in control of this society are afraid of role-playing gamers.
No, no. See, that's it. See what you did there? I didn't say that. You did. But see, I get that a lot. Whenever I talk about stuff like this...
You said people like me, role-playing gamers, push the bounds of identity and reality with my passions.
Are playful with it.
Well, okay, are playful with it. And specifically said, the people in charge, you identified primarily the people in charge, fear that. You used the word fear.
Yes, that's right.
That pretty much to me says the people in charge of society are afraid of role-playing gamers.
They're afraid of anybody who's playful with, not just role-playing gamers, anybody who is playful with ideas of identity and reality because they want to lock that down.
Yeah, and again,
that's not a conspiracy. But see, that's because there are conspiracy theorists out there, and because they dominate these kinds of discussions, that template gets cast on me, I think, unfairly. I didn't say there was a conspiracy. I don't believe in conspiracies. This isn't about a conspiracy.
Well, and I think we're getting semantic again. You're talking about a large group of people who I'm sure would deny what you just said, but you're saying are in fact doing it, sort of as a demographic group.
I'm saying that, not as a coordinated demographic group.
Independently, they all happen to have this feeling, and so it's a cultural movement.
It's a feedback loop is what it is. You get enough people who see things a certain way, and each person or group of people are sort of, as an individual person or group, are doing things to reinforce their own beliefs, but this, in turn, helps other groups have similar worldview, and a feedback loop starts that creates almost an attractor, if you want to put it in the terminology of chaos theory, where a cultural like a cultural maelstrom, if you will, that has weight, and they're not getting behind doors and saying, oh, let's do this, let's conspire against somebody. No, each group who's doing their own thing interacts with other groups, which interact with other groups in a feedback loop that creates a self-sustaining, order kind of emerges from that. Nobody makes it. It just happens in natural social evolution.
To me, all of the things that you've discussed with which I am playful with identity and reality that I have had pretty much my whole life...
Mm-hmm.
As a whole, I feel society is much more tolerant and accepting and enjoying of those things than they were when I was younger. Much more. So many things for which I got ostracized. Some people still look at me weird, but a lot fewer, and a lot more people are tolerant, a lot more people are interested, and a lot more people even get involved, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can see how that would be your experience, but I'm not sure if on the whole that's true or not.
Me neither. I mean, I have no idea, but that has been my experience.
It's kind of like...
I find your argument very thought-provoking. I don't know that I agree with it.
It's almost like someone could argue that feminist ideas are more heard now than they ever were before, because all over the internet people are expressing feminist ideas and feminist frequency and all this, and all of this stuff is out there. But then a person has to ask, okay, it's out there, but is it being heard? Because the thing about today and the internet today is that just about anything is going to get play if it's controversial, if it gets people, you know, worked up, especially if it gets them angry, if it gets them having an argument. Just because something's getting play when it didn't before doesn't mean it's being heard.
And that is true.
And, you know, if it's like, let's say that, you know, that's probably a bad example. But
I think you're going down a dangerous road here.
Which is why I'm going to sort of not. So my point is, well, you know what my point is. But I didn't really intend for us to. I just wanted to bounce that off of you, and then it turned out I did such a poor job explaining it. It took us down a tangent, which that's my fault. I apologize. It's for some reason it's something I still want to give quite a bit more thought to, because, well, there are reasons that I don't feel like I can discuss that I'm thinking about this.
The concept that a lot of individuals who are considered geeks share a common thread of playing around with identity and with reality is an intriguing one. At the point at which the sort of social injustice aspect comes into the argument is when it gets a little weird.
Well, I see, that's not a term I would bring up in regard to the whole thing. All I'm speaking to is the cultural derision, basically.
Well, that I would call social injustice, personally.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. But it does exist. And it seems to me that one has to recognize that, you know, whatever efforts that someone who thinks of themselves as a geek takes to include, say, a sports enthusiast in this group, say, well, see, you're just like me. You're obsessed with something. You're passionate about something. That's all that's going on here. Well, that's not all that's going on there. There's something else going on there that the culture that doesn't think they belong to that group is using to marginalize this group. Now, maybe it's not a harsh margin. I mean, they're not marching into camps or anything like that.
And it goes,
but it's still
other
there.
Directions too. There are not insignificant and not unsizable subcultures that are derisive of sports fans.
Well, it's true.
And back in the day, that might have been a smaller group, but nowadays you can suffer pretty serious discrimination in certain areas, socially speaking, for being a sports fan.
And
I think that's equally as socially unfair as to mock
I agree.
The LARPers.
And to speak to your point about certain things being more popular and accepted than they used to be, I do think that, you know, thanks to people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, that certain choices and hobbies and interests and their lucrativeness, if for lack of a better term, is making people think, okay, well, maybe these nerds are, you know, they have it right. My younger brother went to a tech school. I think I might have told this story before. He went to a tech school that is run by General Motors for a brief period of time, and in Flint, Michigan, and they had a hockey team, and they played in their league. They played another school that was a tech school, people who were, you know, when they were done with their jobs, they were going to be skilled workers on a factory floor or something. And these tech guys going to this GM school were going to be engineers. And whenever they were playing these tech schools and losing, they would chant, "That's all right. That's okay. You're going to work for us someday."
Oh, yes, yes. I recall such things.
Which I thought was kind of interesting and clever, but also a little bit, I don't know, uncomfortable in a lot of ways.
There's a joke at Iowa State University. What do you call a U of Iowa graduate in a suit?
I don't know.
The defendant.
So, yeah, there's, I think because of that, there's a lot of more of acceptance of, you know, well, my kid is socially awkward and everything, and that's bad, but hey, maybe, you know, he's going to be rich someday, and so it's a little more acceptable.
And this goes back to an argument we've had before, where my belief is that the internet culture and the information age and whatever else we want to call it has engendered greater cultural diversity than was previously existent. And this is an example of this. I believe there are much broader communities, both virtually and physically, in which individuals can express whatever their particular social tendencies are.
No, I agree with that.
Which is why Second Life is so full of furries at this point.
I don't dispute that.
I have to believe that just about all of our listeners are going to have a pretty strong opinion on this conversation, one way or the other, and they should weigh in at the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, because as you can see, we have come to no particular conclusion and appear to have pretty strongly different opinions, and honestly, I bet there are a lot of opinions that aren't going to match either of ours in this case. There's a plethora of ways to approach this topic, so I encourage you to write in there. William will definitely respond. The producer will probably respond. I will only respond if I think it's funny. But that's okay, and we don't get any questions today because we are already over time. We provided our own material today.
Is this really going to be the very first podcast where we actually don't draw a question?
I think so. And I was terrified we weren't going to have a title for this either, but then I came up with Snarfblads.
So we're really not going to draw one.
We don't have time. We are over an hour already.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what.
Yeah, if there's earthquakes.
We'll see what the villagers do now.
We know.
And the hat.
I think this just implies that the hat has extended its ability to the degree where it can just directly manipulate our minds into talking about what it wants us to talk about.
Mm.
Of course you do, my dear. For those who didn't hear at home, the producer just thinks it means I. I'm not going to say we, because I know she was talking about me. I'm lazy. So.
Wow.
That's wonderful for
all everybody. Right, well.
Oh, William might be lazy too. All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome to the club. We have a support group once a week.
Excellent.
It's called the Magical Talking App Podcast, and we just do it right here.
Did you say today that we've been married 9 years?
Yes, I did.
Yes, we talked about that.
We talked about that quite a bit, actually. Because apparently we talked about it quite a bit last year, and so he was tying things into that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Apparently we just got nothing to talk about once a year.
Apparently.
We should start celebrating more like 6 months.
Need to spread it out more. Do you have anything to add before we sign off?
I feel like I should, but I actually was going to go out.
Okay. Ezzy, you got anything? You just showed up. Nope, she got bupkis. All right, then. We will talk to you people next week. And Snarfblats.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.